Yet another political storm swamps the Trump administration as the president admits that he passed information to the Russians and is then accused of trying to curb an FBI investigation into ties between his campaign and that country. Craig Gilbert has the latest. Back in Wisconsin, Sheriff David A. Clark Jr. is riding off into the sunset. He's taking a job with the Trump administration. We look at his legacy in Milwaukee County with Dan Bice and Mary Spicuzza. And it's crunch time for a new state budget. We discuss with Jason Stein of our Madison Bureau. All that and more from the best political team in Wisconsin today on Politics. Good afternoon. I'm David Haynes, the opinions editor at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Welcome to On Politics. Well, the Trump administration continues to be chaotic. Controversy swirls around the White House. We talked to Craig Gilbert just a few moments ago about the latest. Well, Craig, controversy continues to swirl around this White House with an appointment yesterday of Robert Mueller, former FBI director, to head up the investigation into the Russia ties potentially with the Trump campaign. How is that being received so far?
Well, it's actually been well received on both sides of the partisan divide in Congress. There are still Democrats who would like to see more. They would like to see an independent commission with a more public obligation to report. Now, remember, the job of the special counsel is to review criminal activity and to issue a report that may never be public. But the man has been widely applauded. He has a great deal of credibility. So in terms of the scope of the criminal investigation within the Justice Department, the choice is being very well received.
How does this this move to appoint Mueller affect the politics of this situation?
Well, I think it takes a little bit of pressure off someone like Paul Ryan, the House Speaker, amid all the clamor for broader investigations, more independent investigations. It doesn't entirely remove that, but now you've got somebody with a great deal of credibility among Democrats as well as Republicans. So I think it takes a little bit of the pressure off the issue of whether there will be a truly independent investigation of the Russia affair. But there's still a lot of politics swirling around the congressional investigations. And now you have the added element of the latest report involving former FBI Director James Comey. The House Oversight Committee, with Paul Ryan's backing, is requesting documents related to the conversations that took place between the president and Jim Comey and whether the president, in fact, asked the FBI director to back off an investigation of former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. So there's plenty of upheaval, ongoing upheaval. The chaos is not ending here. I think there's a glimmer of hope for the Republican congressional leadership that they can return the focus a little bit to their legislative agenda.
Well, that was my next question. Paul Ryan and the other Republican leaders after the election saw an opportunity to perhaps a generational opportunity to enact some of the things that they've had on their agenda for many years. But the turmoil in the administration has really been a problem for them. So what does all of this do to that agenda at this point?
Well, it's not just the turmoil coming out of the White House. I mean, it turns out that there is not entirely a Republican consensus around these issues. You've got real policy disagreements. We saw that play out in the struggle to get a health care bill passed in the House, and now the question, the challenges facing that legislation in the Senate. That's a long, heavy lift. And now tax reform, which looks like it's going to take a lot longer than Republicans initially hoped, and there's big disagreements over aspects of the tax plan that is favored by Paul Ryan, and we're still waiting to hear more about what the White House really wants. So there's just the challenge of finding a Republican legislative consensus, and then on top of that, again, the chaos at the White House is not going to end anytime soon. You have the added element, for example, while these investigations are going on, of how the president reacts to the investigations, and we saw that in a very striking way this morning after issuing a statement last night that was fairly sober about the appointment of Robert Mueller. Donald Trump went on a little bit of a tirade this morning on Twitter and called himself, called it a witch hunt. And that kind of pattern is going to continue to, I think, dog congressional Republicans.
Well, this investigation could take, as you pointed out, months. Well, let's shift gears a little bit. You have an article you've been working on a very different kind of Republican politician, Tommy Thompson. Talk about what you're finding there, what you're going to be reporting.
Well, it was 30 years ago that Tommy Thompson first got elected governor of Wisconsin. It turned out to be the state's longest-serving governor. There's some people who served under him who were kind of looking back and taking stock of his policy and political legacy. And so kind of in that spirit, I'm taking a look at, you know, his very unique electoral track record, all the more remarkable from the vantage point of today when we're used to these very rigid and extreme political fault lines and dividing lines. And you go back and look at how Tommy Thompson performed with voters in Wisconsin that are not traditional Republican constituencies, black voters, Hispanic voters, liberal voters, moderate voters, union voters, young voters, voters in very Democratic enclaves in Wisconsin. He did, he performed in some of his reelection campaigns on a level with those voters far beyond not only any Republican in current times, but really any Republican in his own time and before him. It's quite a fascinating and striking electoral record. It's not necessarily a lasting legacy because, as we've seen, it's a much more polarized time now. And it's not a political style that other Republicans are really trying to replicate, but it's a pretty remarkable contrast and counterpoint to the way politics is practiced today.
Craig, thanks so much. Look for Craig Gilbert's stories this weekend in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Thanks so much, Craig.
Great to be with you.
So now I'm back in the Milwaukee studio with Mary Spicuzza, reporter for the Journal Sentinel, and Dan Bison, columnist for the Journal Sentinel. Dan, let me turn to you first. Speaking of the Trump administration, one of the political characters we like most to cover is headed that direction, Sheriff Clark.
Or at least it appears. He announced that he is taking a job with the Department of Homeland Security. The job's been described as sort of a police or law enforcement liaison, where he'll be working with law enforcement community around the country and speaking on behalf of the Trump administration on those issues. But as with everything with Sheriff Clark, there was some drama. First of all, the Department of Homeland Security has not yet confirmed the appointment. And then secondly, the guy he's replacing had a little Twitter flip out yesterday saying, "I've worked really hard to establish bipartisan relations, and now here comes a guy who says he wants to choke Democrats." So, yeah.
And not only has Homeland Security not announced it, they actually tweeted saying we haven't made any announcement, no announcement has come. So it's like, not only is it silence, it's basically like, no, this actually hasn't happened yet.
So you do have to wonder if he got his cart before his horse in this particular situation.
Maybe he should have held his horses.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Sorry.
So if Sheriff Clark does take the job, it looks like he is, let's talk a little bit about his record here in Milwaukee County. He came in, I think, soon after he was first named to the job. There's a lot of hope he could be pretty good at this job.
Yeah, he did come in with a fair bit of hope. And, you know, early on, he had bipartisan support. Yeah. He had Republican support in him. His first campaign was run by Bill Christopherson, a prominent Democrat who ran Jim Doyle's campaigns. And many people thought that he would represent something new, and he did represent something new. There's no one else who is as inflammatory as polarizing as he is. I mean, even though he runs as a Democrat, he's probably the most conservative person holding office, and certainly in Milwaukee County right now.
But he really wasn't in those early years that inflammatory, was he? I don't recall him being.
You know, I think he moved over time. I don't think it was like a dramatic shift. You know, he moved onto the national stage in 2014 with his victory after Mayor Bloomberg and Chris Abley spent hundreds of thousands of dollars trying to beat him. And then the NRA stepped in and helped save his career. And at that point, he became a spokesman on police issues nationally. with the Ferguson riots going on. He was the spokesman on behalf of the cops, a critic of those who of Black Lives Matter and other groups like that. And then he's just elevated from there when he endorsed Trump in May of 2016. And you know, but he did do some, I mean, when you think of this as just something that's happened the last 2 years, he's provided me good fodder ever since the beginning. So
what will you do without him if he leaves?
I don't know. let's hope he continues to come back to town and do stuff. But yeah, and actually, one thing is, if and when he takes this job, one legacy that he's going to have is a boatload of lawsuits. There are a number of federal lawsuits out there, mainly regarding the jail, and the jail will be the thing that continues to trail him as he goes to Washington.
That was the thing that everyone was talking about on Twitter nationally, at least yesterday when the news broke. Four dead in the jail last year.
Four dead in the jail last year, and this dehydration death where it seems like his water was turned off and this man was potentially never given water until for days until he died. And it doesn't sound like anybody even gave him bottled water that we know of. Mm-hmm. So, and that is ongoing. There could be potential charges for jail staff.
And he's been incredibly quiet about that, about the deaths at the jail. I mean, actually, the one discussion at some length that we know is when the medical examiner sent out a tweet saying that someone had died at the jail. He calls him and goes off on him, and the medical examiner writes this up in an email. But other than that, we have very little in terms of his defense or response for what went on at the jail. And, you know, part of that might be because of these federal lawsuits, he's going to be deposed. He's going to be asked a number of questions. So you don't want to be out there on record saying something that you might have to retract or correct later on.
All right. So, Mary, so what comes next?
Well, we're told no matter what, the horses will stay. But, I mean, I don't know. It's interesting because you would think that this could be trouble for you if you get out in front of your new employer who happens to be the federal government and announce your new job before they're prepared to and before they've told your replacement. That could be trouble. But, you know, he certainly seems like he's been tight with the Trump administration and conservatives. So if he gets his job, it sounds like essentially an interim sheriff would be appointed until the next election.
So what's next is he moves from being a big fish in a relatively small pond where anytime he says something, it's big news, to being a very small fish in a big pond where he could, I'm guessing, go a long time without anyone paying attention to what he has to say. How does he make an adjustment to that? And then secondly, the people already lining up to run for his position.
And to be appointed by Governor Walker.
Which will be the next step.
So the process there is Governor Walker appoints someone to fill out his term?
And people can apply for that. And then
as soon as Clark submits his official letter of resignation.
Which he hadn't done yet as of yesterday. So
then people apply, and we have some people, Ernell Lucas, former captain, Major League Baseball.
Who is planning against running against him, planning to run against
and
him
And he is running
anyway.
Right now. He is running, out there running. He says he's going to apply for the position. Judge Seifert says he's not going to apply for the position, but he is planning to run next year. And then another name that comes up a lot is Kevin Carr, who used to be Sheriff Clark's number two, who's now the U.S. Marshal. The Trump administration fired a number of U.S. Marshals, but did not fire Kevin Carr. He's still in that job. The only question is, would you want to leave a comfortable job making good money as the U.S. Marshal? Plus, he had a huge backdrop when he retired from the county. Does he want to give that up to go back to a job that's going to be a huge headache with, you know, a relatively small department that's in the midst of a crisis over the jail?
Where you have to run for election in a year or so.
Next year, 2018. Yeah. All right. Well, more to come on that, I'm sure. Let's move now to the state budget. I spoke with Jason Stein of our Madison Bureau just a few minutes ago about what's next in the state budget deliberations. So, Jason, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you, David.
Hey, so on the state budget, we're really down to crunch time here. Things are going to have to be decided fairly soon. What can we expect over the next few days to a week?
Well, you know, I wish I could tell you with that sort of crystal ball certainty. What I can tell you is the Republicans that control state government have got to get a plan for putting everything together, and they don't have it yet. I mean, the way it works right now, they're working on little small pieces of the puzzle. but they're rapidly getting to the point where they have to solve everything at once. Because when you're putting together a budget, you know, it does not work to figure out exactly how much you're going to spend and then work on the tax side and figure out something that doesn't fit with that, right? It's all got to be put together, and it's got to be put together, you know, in the next few weeks.
So are we any closer to a deal on the transportation, how to fund transportation in the state? That's been one of the sticking points.
We are and we aren't. I mean, maybe we are in the sense that lots of trial balloons have been floated by all kinds of people within the Republican Party. I mean, most recently, the Assembly Republican Caucus put together a very complex and broad plan to increase taxes on fuel, lower them on income taxes, did a whole number of things. And that plan really, at least so far, has gone nowhere. Senate Republicans and Governor Walker are both panning that plan. So, maybe in the sense that we've put aside a lot of options that could have been done, but what we don't yet have is people coalescing around something that they do want to do.
So let's shift gears for a moment and talk about the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. New audit out. You wrote about it in the paper Thursday morning. What does that audit say? WEDC has been able to keep itself out of the news for the last couple of years. What's the news here?
Right. So this is the state's flagship jobs agency. 2 years ago, they had a tough audit, and the governor actually took away from them, along with lawmakers, their ability to lend money to businesses. And it is sort of awkward in that last week, Republicans went along with Walker's proposal to give that authority back to the agency because it had stayed out of the news, had seemed to make some improvements, and I think had made some improvements. But yesterday, an audit comes out detailing again that there are still some real areas for improvement within that agency. And one of the areas is that their delinquent loans increased by, you know, from like $1 million to I believe it was $11 million. So, you know, that I think will come up before lawmakers again as a, you know, Democrats certainly will talk about, you know, do we really want to give more authority to this agency when it, you know, has still some growing pains.
Yeah, there's some concern about double counting of jobs, too, I think, as well, right? In the audit.
Correct. There were several things. There were that the agency's online jobs totals don't really accurately reflect in all cases the information that the agency itself knows about companies. So a company may get an award. The agency puts that award on its website and the 100 jobs the award is supposed to create. But the agency doesn't necessarily then note when the company cancels the award or shutters the factory, mm-hmm. That sort of thing. Also, the agency has millions of dollars in tax credits that it has overpaid or underpaid to businesses because of miscalculations over recent years. And the agency is still trying to work through fixing all of that.
So I think there's been a sense since Mark Hogan took over the agency, a very well-respected business person in the Milwaukee area.
Former lender, former Milwaukee banker and lender.
At M&I and later BMO. There's been a sense that the agency's been on a more even keel since he took the helm. How did WEDC react to this audit when it was announced?
They did not duck and cover. I actually went in with another reporter and spoke to Mark Hogan for more than an hour yesterday about the audit. And he was fairly frank in recognizing that the auditors, you know, had found things that he needed to continue to address. In that sense, I think they're meeting this head on. They can point to areas where the audit did show them making an improvement, but they also acknowledge that they have to do more going forward.
All right, Jason Stein in Madison, thanks so much.
Hey, thank you, David.
All right, so once again, it's our favorite time of the show for winners and losers. And Dan, let me turn to you first. Who's your winner?
My winner's Representative Mike Gallagher. He's responded in a series of tweets to the firing of James Comey, saying he raised serious questions and acting like an independent member of Congress who was concerned about this situation. You know, it'd be easy for him just to sit back and not do anything, but I thought it was a good move by him. In a district that went for Trump, I think it was 56% of the vote, but still it's a swing district, so maybe he's realizing that people in the district aren't particularly thrilled with what's going on in the White House.
He has shown some independence since being elected.
So, yeah, and, you know, yeah. Reed Ribble did as well, yeah. His predecessor, so it's I think it's a good sign that he's responding that way.
How about your loser?
By contrast, you know, we have Paul Ryan, who has gone from being the conscience of the party to right now is the sycophant of the party, who's finding it very hard to criticize the Trump administration. And then just yesterday, the Washington Post reported on this conversation, had this transcript of this conversation from the last summer in which Kevin McCarthy suggested that the Russians might be paying Donald Trump. And his response was basically, keep this under wraps, tell no one, this stays within the family. And then when
no leaks,
and then when his spokesman was asked about it, his spokesman lied until it became clear that the Washington Post had a transcript of this. So not such a good week. And in addition to all that, clearly the Republican agenda has been derailed by all of this activity is going on.
No, we should say, in fairness, the Ryan and McCarthy folks both said, well, he meant that as a joke.
Later, after they acknowledge that the conversation happened.
Everybody wants to keep jokes in the family.
All right, Mary, who's your loser?
I'm going to go with Donald Trump. The president has obviously had a rough week.
Pretty tough week, even by his standards.
And there have been some tough weeks for this administration, yeah. But this one just seems to be, it just seems like the Trump administration, and it's particularly his West Wing staff, are just scrambling, and I'm imagining Reince pouring Baileys on his cereal as he
said he'd never do that.
He said he wasn't at that point yet, I think, was what he had previously said.
He could be.
Before the election. But it just sounds like, you know, there's obviously been, like, disconnect between what his spokespeople have said and then when he gets on Twitter and tweets out to his followers. And it never seems to quite match up. And then he's threatened to, you know, basically cut off news conferences if people are complaining that they're not saying the same thing. There have been, Comey, who kept a pretty clear paper trail, as we've seen. It seems like if Trump did indeed pressure him to either end the Russia investigation or let Flynn off the hook or possibly jail journalists, all of that is a problematic thing for a president to be asking an FBI director to do.
Now he's heading to the Middle East, which with many presidents you think, oh, okay, he's taking a break, but with Trump, you have no idea what he's going to say when he's over there. Well,
and there were reports that he was very reluctant to go, asking about cutting down the days of the trip, not wanting to do much public appearances. There's been this controversy with Israel and this debate over the wall. So, yeah, it's we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. All right. And your winner?
So that would go back to Mr. Comey, the former FBI director, who apparently kept a very careful paper trail of what was taking place and what was being said. He filed this memo after his meeting with Trump and apparently spoke to people and made people aware of it. And this is where he indicated that the president essentially very promptly asked him to let Flynn off the hook and kind of let the whole thing go, jail journalists, pressuring him for his loyalty, that sort of thing. So if he continued to keep that kind of paper trail, I think we're going to learn more, and the Trump administration has disputed his characterization of the conversations. But again, even saying he better hope there are no tapes of those then raises the question of whether the president is making secret tapes of his conversations. So I think Comey, although he has been fired, looks like he, is still having an impact.
Not the last we've heard of Jim Comey. So let's take a couple of questions. The first one is for our thoughts around the buzz regarding Evan Goyke being considered for a statewide bid. And the writer says, I've heard it could be lieutenant governor. Have you heard anything about that?
I think it shows, not to be too harsh, but Evan's relatively new in the legislature. And, you know, right now it's the people who are talking about running for statewide offices These are all relatively new people. I mean, the people thinking about running for governor. Now you've got like Mike McCabe, who's never held office before, talking about running for this office. It shows that the what's been said repeatedly, which is the Democratic bench is incredibly short right now.
It's pretty thin.
Right. I have a hard time imagining people hearing the name Evan Goyke and saying, like, whoa, I'm not getting in. I'm clearing the field. Like, no way am I going up against him. Nothing against him. He seems like a very nice man. He seems very sincere and very devoted. But I just don't.
He grew up around politics.
Right.
His dad's a lobbyist. Has been a lobbyist for a long, long time. But, yeah.
But pretty young.
We'll see how it goes.
Okay, and let's take one more. Dan, let me start with you on this one. Is generating an enemies list consistent with the Bradley Foundation's mission and its it being a 501c3? I'm not sure they did actually have an enemies list.
Yeah, they did. They had a list. Okay. They had a list of, and we posted
one
the
Wisconsin
list.
One Wisconsin Now was on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, we posted
Mother
a list
Jones.
Of 17 people, 17
Center
groups that were thwarting the work of conservatives. Okay. Frankly, I don't think there's anything wrong with having an enemies list or, you know, a list of people that you're opposed to, because they are an ideological foundation. And just, you know, I've been writing a lot about are actually writing a story together about the Bradley Foundation since its files were hacked and what's going on. The problem actually with the Bradley Foundation seems to be elsewhere, and that is that they've been funding one particular group that recruits candidates. They say conservative candidates, pro-freedom candidates, but they're almost always Republican candidates. And so there's a question about that. And then there's also a question that they've been funding a couple groups that the hacked files show describe themselves as union busting groups. And the question is, the Bradley Foundation is supposed to be giving money to things that contribute to the public good. Is union busting a public good, or is that a private benefit to businesses or to others? So I think that's the bigger question. And then the question is, how partisan are they? They say they're not involved in politics. Their impact is all indirect. You know, some of the records have shown they're very keenly aware of their impact, particularly here in Wisconsin. And in fact, there's a video in which they brag about their successes here in Wisconsin. So I think those are the bigger issues.
So Dan, as you plowed through those records, and I have to say, reading the stories, which I found fascinating, but I didn't find anything surprising. Did you?
I'm surprised by the unguarded language.
Okay.
The fact that they would say, for instance, in one example where they set up a media outlet in Madison, we're going to exploit the whole left by the people, by the traditional media and the way they're withdrawing. Or that they would, they have a Wisconsin network of 13 or 14 conservative groups here. They grade those things. I mean, you might expect that they do that, but they're out there. That the Wisconsin Institute of Law and Liberty is our MVP. That's the best one.
Of organization where it's like we've got the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, we've got our media arm, we've got it was much more
it is way more
intricate
organized,
and organized
than I think than the
very
left
organized.
I think it's much more
way
organized
more
than
the
left.
But yeah,
and
I think
that is surprising. I think their patience has been surprising to me. Yeah. Most people are affected by each election. They have a long game, and they're spending more than a decade trying to build up a conservative infrastructure. And I think I quoted one person saying they're trying to establish a permanent red wall that it would guarantee a certain number of votes for the president in each election. I think the fact that they're so methodical, and it's not surprising, Mike Grebe, a former military guy, is the one who's in charge of the operation, or was until last year. Mm-hmm. And the records we're seeing are showing how they built these things very slowly. I mean, very methodically.
And it's interesting how much they're focused on the long ball, like that they kind of were like, we're keep losing, you know, we can't beat Obama, we're just going to focus on the states, and then kind of use that to affect the federal government, but really focus on the statewide infrastructure, and obviously have been successful in Wisconsin.
It's also clear, and a little bit surprising, how far ahead they are of politicians. The union issue, which Governor Walker brought up and made an issue in 2011, they were on that issue in 2004. Their funding groups attacking unions starting in 2004 and moving forward year by year by year. So by the time 2011 came, they were ready to go. There was a ton of material out there. They credit one of the groups they're funding with coming up with the issue of WEA Trust. Came up with it in 2009, 2 years before Scott Walker mentioned it. Same thing with welfare reform.
The success
a
sequence.
Lot of these welfare reform issues that we're seeing now, they're 2, 3, 4 years ahead of most politicians, including Governor Walker on this. Plus, you can see just how closely aligned Governor Walker is with this with their agenda. There's almost nothing that they disagree on. The only thing is that the governor was a little slow on right to work. He didn't immediately jump on that, and they had been pushing that issue for a long time. But I think there are surprising things, but it has to do more with how they're carrying out their vision, yeah. not
the
what their vision
sophistication.
Is. Right.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
an organization. All right. Well, that's a wrap for this week. Thanks to Dan Bice, Mary Spacuzza, Craig Gilbert in Washington, Jason Stein in Madison. I'm David Haynes with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Thanks for joining us.